One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the show that explores our guests' life stories through the lens of three songs that have fused with their memories. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Kanairy. Our guest this week is John McKenney. John was born in Hamilton, Ohio, but his family moved to Fort Myers when he was 8 years old. John met his lifelong friend, Jerry Toronto, in sixth grade, and they played in bands all the way through their time at Cypress Lake High School, which had just opened. The first was a three-piece called the Continentals, but it morphed into many configurations, including the Tropics, the High Tones, the Ron King and High Tones, and then the last was called the Painted Faces, which was one of Fort Myers' most well-known bands at the time. They played the old Exhibition Hall in downtown Fort Myers, as well as gigs in Sarasota, Bradenton, Clearwater, and Lakeland. As a local house band, the Painted Faces opened for a number of big names, including Roy Orbison and Neil Diamond. The Painted Faces recorded a few songs through a subsidiary of Capitol Records and got quite a bit of airplay on local radio. They were even written up by Billboard magazine and were listed as one of the top Florida garage bands of the 1960s. Between their junior and senior year, they spent the summer playing in Greenwich Village and around New York City. In the end, the rest of the band stayed, and he and Jerry came home to finish high school. John got married to his high school sweetheart after graduating high school, and music became less of a priority. He says he had a spiritual awakening and conversion at the age of 20, and worship music has been a regular part of his musical expression ever since. He's also currently playing in a blues band and rehearsing with a local 80s band in Portland, Oregon, which is where he and his wife have lived since 1979. They have four kids and 12 grandchildren. John comes our way via past guest Sheldon Zolden. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be back in Fort Myers.
Welcome to Fort Myers. You came from Portland?
From the Portland, Oregon area. Yeah.
What's the weather like up there right now?
Probably in the 40s, cloudy, maybe drizzly.
Yeah.
Typical northwest weather that we have so much up there.
You mentioned you listened to the John McEwen interview I did. Just so you know, I used his script as the template for this one. So wherever it said John McEwen, I just had to change it to John McKenney.
I thought about that, the fact, the similarity in the names.
Have you listened to any music so far today?
Today, actually I have. My friend Sheldon and his wife and I were listening to some Fernando Ortega music this morning.
On your way here or like?
Just before we left the house. We were comparing our favorite tunes by him. So
cool. So you were born in Ohio but moved here when you were eight. What Correct. Brought your family here?
Well, you know, I didn't know at the time that my mother was pregnant, and never occurred to me that there wasn't a dad because I didn't know where babies came from anyway, I guess. and so apparently my mother moved down here to remove herself from the stigma of that situation. And later on that year, she came back from the hospital and said the baby died. I found out when I was about 45, he hasn't. So somewhere out here in the Fort Myers, South Florida area, I may have a half-brother I've never met.
Wow. So I moved here from Kansas City with my family when I was eight. I went to the Villas for 1 year, and then Orangewood, and then Fort Myers Middle, and then Fort Myers High. Where'd you go?
I had the first two. Started off at Orangewood, and then they built Villas Elementary.
Okay.
And then Cypress Lake, the first year that it opened was only 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. And each year they added another year, and I was the first in that first class that started in 7th grade and went all the way to
So you were in the first graduating high school senior class of Cypress Lake High School.
That had gone through all,
wow.
all of them.
Wow. Yeah. Did Orangewood have the people putting their names in the cement all the way back to when you were there, or did that come later?
I don't remember that. So
okay. When I got there, there was at least 15 years. They would make a whole big stretch of cement, and they would color it a different color, and all the class, the fifth graders would get to sign it.
I don't remember that. So,
How would you describe, and we'll start here, how would you describe the musical background of your childhood? Like what was, you know, around you musically when you were young?
Well, I had two older brothers, and I think – I think I must have heard them playing their 45s or something as a kid, because I remember being hearing and thinking about Elvis Presley. But I was particularly drawn to people like the Everly Brothers, and there was another group, I think they were called the Fleetwoods, but I liked that close harmony mm-hmm. ballad kind of music, but was enamored with Elvis and those kinds of things. So.
Were musical instruments being played around you?
My brother played a harmonica, and I think he dabbled with guitar. I have a picture when I'm about 6 years old standing on a porch in Ohio with my mother's lap steel Hawaiian guitar in my hands. Hmm. That's my first memory. But so there was a little bit of music occurring around.
And then you were a saxophone player? Was that your first instrument?
Yeah, I remember, you know, I think in band or in sixth grade, they start you off on a tonette. And my first instrument that I started playing, and I went through alto, tenor, and I even tried a baritone sax, but they're a lot to carry home from school back and forth. So I think I eventually landed mostly on tenor sax.
Why did you choose that? Or at that age, did it choose you? You know, did the teacher say, we need a sax player, John, you're one?
I don't remember. Maybe it was, what was that song? Was it? I can't remember who it was by, Yakety Sax. That was,
yeah,
I remember
yeah.
that
don't
one.
Talk back.
Yeah, don't. I don't know if that was influential.
Yeah, yeah. Don't talk back.
That's it.
You know, later in, we'll get to bands and stuff after your first song, but you weren't a sax player. You know, at what point did you pick up a guitar or then a bass guitar?
Well, I've mentioned, I think in that little short bio I sent to you, that my friend Jerry Trano, he moved into the Villas, and I was in sixth grade at the time, and he was a musician, played guitar, and I said, well, I play saxophone, and we tried that for a real short period of time. Obviously, it wasn't going to work, so he started teaching me how to play a little guitar, and then I kind of just picked it up on my own and played guitar for 2 or 3 years until I think it was ninth grade, and the little band that was starting to come into fruition, the bass player wanted to play football. That meant he couldn't come to practice every afternoon like we always wanted to do. So I said, okay, let me try bass. And so for the next 4 or 5 years, I would switch back and forth between.
Was learning bass easy enough having already played the guitar?
Yeah, I think it was, because I could just watch the guitar player's hands. And when he went to a certain position, I knew what chord that was. So I knew where to search for that note, that root note. So, yeah.
I got to ask, and this is so hyper local, where in the Villas did you grow up? Because I spent a lot of time in the Villas.
2313 Sunrise Boulevard. It was directly across from what was then the recreational
center.
Yeah,
the little civic center thing there. So about halfway down.
Used to have a big pond there, and my brothers poached alligators out of it. And
I spent a lot of time in that neck of the woods.
Went through Hurricane Donna in 1960 on September the 10th in that location.
One of my best friends, Biff, grew up on Sunrise, second house to the end on the left before you got to whatever that street at the end was.
Yeah, right before Crystal Drive. And we used to go back in that area and camp, and it was
the Ten Mile Canal,
yeah. And it was nothing but swamp and
I smoked my first cigarette next to Ten Mile Canal. Mm. Oh, too much information. Mm. So do you still play instruments today?
I do. I became a Christ follower in the 70s and went off to Bible college, and then we moved to the Northwest for me to go to graduate school. And in all of those occasions, I played mainly church music, and then slowly started to be, comfortable enough to start playing other back into the secular realm of music. And I play in a blues band right now and an 80s band, and as well as playing worship music.
So. Okay. Well, we'll catch back up to that in a little bit, but let's do your first song now.
All right. Let me introduce it first, and then you can listen to it. As I said, I was in that early era of my life, and that desire for those ballad types of songs. I just enjoyed vocal harmony, particular My sons ended up in a very successful a cappella group out in the Northwest. But there was one song that I really liked very well was Ritchie Valens' O'Donna. And I don't know, you know, young puberty, all those things. But ironically enough, in ninth grade, I was walking down the hallway of Cypress Lake School and with a friend, and it was about 2 weeks into the opening of school year, and down walks this new girl in school. And I turned to my friend and Kim and said, I think I'm going to marry that girl. And her name was Donna, and I'm still with her 54 years later.
I just met her in the lobby.
58 years later, actually, since 1964 till today.
Wow. Well, let's listen to this song.
All right.
Which, by the way, it's not called Oh Donna. His version was just called Donna.
Okay, yeah, it's just a refrain in it.
Yeah.
And it's a three-chord song.
It's even more accurate. All right, this is John McKenney's first song here on Three Song Stories. This is Donna by Ritchie Valens, released as a single in 1958 as the A-side to La Bamba on the B-side.
Oh, Donna.
So you were already familiar with this song when you met her?
Yes.
When you realized what her name was, did you immediately think of this song?
Oh, I'm sure, because, you know, that often was when people would refer to us, and that usually would be mentioned, the O'Donna song. So, but it's, and I didn't know then that was just three simple chords, you know, one, four, five chords, like so many of rock and roll songs are. But it seemed like a masterpiece to me then as a kid.
How long between seeing her for the first time and asking her out?
Wasn't too long. I think within a couple months we were going steady, and it's unlike Ritchie's experience, which I went back and read a little bit about the history of the song, and there really was a girl and who he had broken up with, and unlike his situation, Don and I are still together, and I'm thankful. It's been the best thing that's happened to me in my life. So,
As I read it in your bio, you played the sax until 11th grade. So does that mean you were in, like, did they have a band? I mean, it was a new school. Was there a high school band? Was there a marching band?
There was a high school marching band. My friend Sheldon, his wife Denise, who we're staying with when we come to Fort Myers, she was in that band. She was a year younger, I think. But a lot of memories. I hated marching in the Edison Light Parade. I never could. We're supposed to memorize the music, and I remember going down U.S. 41,
just faking it.
A TV news camera guy sticking his microphone in my saxophone bell, and I blared out something. But anyway.
That parade, I think, is coming up either this weekend or next weekend.
I think it's tomorrow night.
Oh, is it tomorrow night? I should know that.
Yeah.
Did you do anything like theater or anything like that in high school? Did they even have theater back then?
Probably, but no, I did not.
No. Did you ever dance with Donna to Donna? I was going to ask you about high school dances, and I was wondering if maybe you guys ever had a dance and danced to that song.
She refers to that era as she was the groupie because I played for our high school prom, and so she was
your band.
Yeah, our band did. And I think we probably did. I have a picture of our little three-piece band, myself, Jerry Toronto, and Bobby Heckscher, whose dad owned WMYR, at Cypress Lake's first dance in seventh grade that year. But so she didn't often get – we didn't have those kinds of experiences because I was always in the band.
You were the rock star.
Yeah, well,
what was the first band you had?
I think that was called that band we called ourselves the Continentals.
And you were how old?
Seventh grade.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you said seventh grade. Yeah. I wanted to clarify.
13, I guess, met Donna the next year when I was 14. Well, I'm not until ninth grade. So it went on to be then, I think we called ourselves the Tropics. And there ended up being a really hot band out of St. Pete called the Tropics. So we ditched that name. Then we changed their name to the Hightones. And then there was a local frontman who really changed our band dynamic because he was a very good vocalist named Ron King, who's disappeared off the planet of the earth. Can't find him anymore. Then that band, you want me to go on?
Yeah.
That band somehow, and I've lost track of how it came about, but there was a band in Naples, and they were called The Gestures. Wally Fredrickson and his dad had a recording studio in Naples, which we ended up later on recording in, two-track in a garage. We were a classic garage band. They split, and part of that band came bands kind of just, it was like wife swapping. A few of us went with one band and a few of us went with the other. And we, at that point, became, let's call ourselves the Fifth Dimension. Ah, that's a great name. And about a few months later, out came nationally the Fifth Dimension. And so that's when we changed our name to the Painted Faces, which became probably the most well-known, and we did the recordings and things.
What kind of music were you playing early on, and how did it evolve over time until you then became the Painted Faces?
Well, we started off basically as an instrumental band. We didn't have any strong vocalists. And The Ventures, Ghost Riders in the Sky, those kinds of things. And then as I think about the time that Ron King became our really strong vocalist in that particular ensemble, that was just around the Beatles time, you know. So, and my friend Jerry was strong. He and I, you know, sit down, let's listen to the new Beatles album cover to cover, that kind of thing. And so until the Painted Faces came about, then it was the Beatles versus Stone, because our lead singer, Jack O'Neill, was a Mick Jagger fan.
Okay.
So it became, which do we do? How much do we do of the Beatles covers or the Stones covers? And so it was that kind of dynamic in music.
I have pulled off of YouTube two songs by the Painted Faces. One is called I Want You, and one is called I Lost You in My Mind. Mm-hmm. Which should we play a little of?
Well,
or is there one you'd like us to look up? Jerry could always look up.
Anxious Colors, I think, was the one where we actually got on the charts in Billboard magazine.
Anxious Colors.
Anxious Colors.
Painted Faces, Jared. Do it.
This is the one I had to ask my friend if I played, what did I play on this? Because we were in that transition period where when the Painted Faces started with Fifth Dimension, they brought a bass player. I said, okay, I'll go back to guitar. But then that guy went off to college.
And then dreams have been haunting me.
When was the last time you listened to this?
I'll make the world like
it's been a while.
Definitely has that
Fort
that,
Myers
that era.
Psychedelic.
And so you recorded this in a garage in Naples?
Yeah.
And it made it to some charts?
Yeah, we were picked up by some Manhattan Records, which a subsidiary of Capitol Records, I think.
There's more than one person singing. Did you do a little singing in this?
No, that's my friend Jerry.
Okay.
One of my shout-outs.
So. according to Wikipedia, the band name was inspired by William Golding's Lord of the Flies.
I think that's where Jack fashioned himself a real thinker, and he was in a whole different world than the rest of the band, I think.
Yeah.
But, he's still up in the Jersey area playing and doing music.
You guys, as I read it, made it out of Florida for a while. What was that, still in high school?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact chronological year. Between our junior and senior year, we loaded up our 1968 Volkswagen bus and made it to Greenwich Village and played the whole summer in the village. Cafe Wa, Eighth Wonder, a couple other places that had famous people involved in it. And it came towards the end of the summer, and the band wanted to stay. And Jerry and I, mainly from our parents insisted that we come back and finish up high school. So that's when the band split and they stayed together, came back into Fort Myers for a little while, had some success, ended up touring the Virgin Islands. And there's still a member of the group here in town named George Shuley who was in that remaining group. So most of the people in that group are still involved in music.
Were you disgruntled by being made to come back and finish high school? Did you feel like you guys had the legs to maybe make it happen, or were you kind of like, okay, I should probably finish high school?
Well, to be truthful, I don't even remember too much of the emotions. I think I missed my girlfriend, my Donna, and was probably ready to go home. We came walking out of the Greenwich Village, which is a basement cafe, and there were three guys walking down the street carrying most of our instruments. We chased them down the street.
They weren't your roadies. They were stealing.
Yeah, they were stealing. one time I got separated from the band, and we were staying in this sleazy hotel somewhere, so I had to take a cab, but I didn't have enough money to tip the guy, and the cab driver cussed me out. So I probably was emotionally ready to come back to Fort Myers and get out of the big city. So
did you try to spin anything else up here without them, or was that kind of the end of your rock and roll lifestyle?
When Jerry and I got back in town, we became a member of probably the other big group in town, which was the Bees, Wally Naylor and the Bees. They used to be one of the best or the biggest and best groups that played at the Fort Myers Teen Club there at Fort Myers High School. And then later on, their dad, who was a gladiola farmer at his gladiola packing plant on Fowler, opened up the Beehive.
Huh. And where was that?
On Fowler, somewhere between the airport and Winkler.
Okay.
So I've tried to locate it driving down there.
It's hard, yeah.
Nothing looks the same.
There's trees on Fowler now.
Yeah, so, but we became a part of that group for a little while. I remember the gold sequin jacket my mom had to sew because to match the rest of the guy's band. That was a fun experience. And then I got married right immediately after high school in 68. And on my honeymoon in Fort Lauderdale, I got a call from one of those guys. Actually, it was another band member who's in my shout out list who said, "Hey, we're playing at the Outrigger Lounge and we need somebody to play bass. Can you come?" So I said, "Well, I'm on my honeymoon." He said, "Well, we start next Monday night." So I came back and we were only going to stay a few days anyway. But so I played in some bar bands and things like that for the next year or two. Dabbled around, but nothing of any lasting.
Let's do your second song.
All right, my second song. Well, it was about... Do you want me to introduce it first?
Up to you.
Yeah, let's do it that way. It was about that time that in 1970, my older living brother, who was an alcoholic, became what we called in the 70s a Jesus freak. And for about a year, I listened and argued with him, and eventually my wife and I became also a follower of Christ, and it radically impacted our lives. And we started, I had to separate myself from that lifestyle, that music, that world, drug, sex, and rock and roll, and all of those things. And but the problem was there wasn't any music that I could really identify with within the church. I was thinking this morning of Steve Martin's song, "Atheists Don't Got No Songs." So there was country gospel, which kind of had a beat, but there was really nothing to listen to. And all of a sudden, someone gave me this song, probably in a vinyl album, maybe a CD, I don't remember. But there was a movement out of the West Coast, out of Calvary Chapel, and this group, Maranatha Music, and the group's name was Love Song. And this song, Little Country Church, actually sounded like rock music. I went back and listened to it after I chose it, and I, well, it seemed a lot hotter then, but compared to what was out there in the day, it wasn't a predictable Christian contemporary song. It was actually close to rock and roll. And just as a side note, years later, my sons, who were in an a cappella group and used to tour around, were in a church, and in that particular concert evening, one of the members of Love Song was doing a few of his songs. Mm. So it was a full circle there. But it was called Little Country Church, and it actually sounded like rock and roll music, and it was life-giving for me at that period in my life.
Let's listen to it.
All right.
Little Country Church by the band Love Song. What a great name for a band, Love Song. I was a little confused at first. From their self-titled album released in 1972, this is John McKenney's second song on today's episode of Three Song Stories. It's Biography Through Music.
It's very plain to see. It's not the way it used to be.
Did that open up a whole new world of music? Was that like, was that your way into finding music that aligned with what you wanted to hear with what you wanted to hear?
it became, you know, there was a whole flood of Christian artists that came out at that time, Phil Keaggy being one of them, who was in the group Glass Harp and then later on went on to, is still a very influential, amazing guitarist in Christian music. So it became... All of a sudden, I felt like I had music for my soul again that wasn't there before, and so I really enjoyed it. I was just thinking if we could diverse a little bit. We missed a whole era of Florida, South Florida history of music.
Bring it.
By not talking about the Southwest Florida Star Spectaculars.
Okay.
At the now defunct, no longer existing Exhibition Hall. That's really
the one that was downtown.
Downtown, on the water. That's how our band, between that and the fact that we used to play at the foot of Fort Myers Beach Pier at the Tip Top every Sunday afternoon, between that and the Southwest Florida Star Spectaculars, which there was a promoter out of St. Petersburg named A.J. Perry. He was a little crazy. He would charge, I think, $1.50 for the to come to the Exhibition Hall on Friday nights, and there would usually be two or three bands, and he would bring in a star. And so we were one of those rotating house bands. Matter of fact, he was the one that made us, excuse me for bumping the mic, change our names to the High Tones, I believe. He was a part of that process. But they would bring in, we opened for people like Roy Orbison, Lou Christie. One time we did the tour between Lakeland, Clearwater, Sarasota, and Florida, and backing up B.J. Thomas? I think B.J. Thomas and Billy Joel Royal, who did Down in the Boondocks. So we had a little exposure to a lot of different, one time in Sarasota, this guy, I never heard of him before, Neil Diamond, came walking up in the stage, and he had the hit out, Solitary Man.
So you sort of shared a stage with him.
We opened for him. We didn't know who he was. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels were in that venue, I remember, another time. So that was a big area, a big influence in Southwest Florida was what happened at the Exhibition Hall.
I remember the Exhibition Hall. That's where the dances were.
Yeah, the Allman Brothers and lots of different fun groups.
Did you ever play anything at the Hall of 50 States right there a couple blocks down?
Mm-mm. Yeah. I don't think it was in existence, at least.
It definitely was in existence. It may have just not been used for that sort
for that
of thing
because
kind of it was way – it's still there. They're trying to raise money to save it, but it dates way back. Mm. Did you ever see Little Country Church live?
I never saw.
Were they around very long?
No, I was here and they were on the West Coast, and I have found now, living on the West Coast, people make reference to groups, and I say that must have been a West Coast band because there's a band out of the Frisco that was one of the guitar players went on to play for Chicago, and a friend of mine keeps talking about him. I said, I never heard of him before. So there was that localized guy.
What took you to the West Coast?
to go to graduate school.
Where'd you go to college before grad school?
I went down to Miami Christian. It was an evolving name and actually not even in existence now. It was Miami Christian Bible College University, and it was kind of absorbed by Trinity College out of Chicago. But I attended Western Conservative Baptist Seminary in Portland, Oregon. Almost got my MDiv, but didn't finish.
What was it like moving from Fort Myers, Florida to Portland, Oregon at that time? Different kind of worlds.
Yeah.
Still today, they're different kind of worlds.
Yeah.
But what was it like?
Well, I didn't really miss the humidity, but in cold winters, I sure miss white sand beaches and warm sunshine. So it was a change. I grew up in the 60s in the Villas, and we didn't even have an air-conditioned car or a house. So I didn't mind the heat as much, but my wife fell in love with the Northwest, and you know, when your kids start going to school and plant roots down, it just kind of came, well, we'll just stay here because it's a good life here. So,
seen any good bands or anything like that over the years in Portland? I mean, you've been there for 40 years. So.
Yeah. Well,
More than 40. How many years have you been there?
We moved in 79. So.
79. So, yeah, 45 years.
Yeah. the last big thing I went to was at the Tacoma Dome and saw Elton John in his final tour. My daughter had purchased some tickets for someone else. That didn't happen. And so she says, hey, I got two extra tickets to Elton John. So I had my friend who lives here fly up. I've lost track. I think it might have been 2016 to see Paul McCartney in the Moda Center. So, another friend of mine is the drummer for Vince Gill. And in my Bands in Town app, it popped up Vince Gill was there last night. And so I texted Billy and I said, hey, are you going to be in Portland? And I'm in Florida. He says, well, no, that's Vince. He's with the Eagles tonight. So, there's a lot of, it's one of the spots that they often stop at.
You ever see any concerts with Sheldon and his wife?
With them? Well, whenever we're in town, we're going tonight to listen to another one of my shout-out friends. I think he's down at Sneaky Pete's, so we're going to go hear him.
What kind of music is that?
Cover music from the 60s. David Frania and his wife Cindy. And I don't even know. He does solo. He's in a trio with his wife and another gal. He's in two or three bands. One of them called Jacob's Ladder, and the other is called Wild Horse, Running Horse, something like that.
So you said you mentioned that you play in a blues band and a bit of an 80s cover band or something?
Right.
What's the deal with the – let's start with the blues band. How long have you been with it? What kind of gigs do you play? Or do you play gigs?
Yeah. Yeah, I just did my first one since I injured my finger in November. We had just a local bar in Tigard, Oregon, outside of Portland. We did a gig last Friday night. So they're just, we're a bit eclectic and, we do some Jimmy Buffett and things like that.
A blues band that does Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're a bit of a cover band specializing in blues. I'll leave it at that. But.
And then the 80s band is distinct from that?
Yeah, that's I just started getting involved with them. They were looking for a bass player. I'm not even sure if the groups they're trying to reestablish.
It's in its formative stages.
Right. And then I practiced last Saturday afternoon with them and then got on the plane and did a red-eye special to hear. So I had injured my finger, so we had to take 2 months off, and we're just still trying to get the band back in going. And I don't know if it's will ever develop to where there's a lot of potential there, and it's a lot more interesting music than a lot of the three chord blues stuff that I'm doing in the other band. That they're doing some Journey and stuff like that. So,
You mentioned you have kids. Did your kids ever bring home music that you were like, "What are you listening to?"
No, they seem to be. I think my love for music and my choices of music seem to have influenced them more. My daughter played in one of the blues bands with me. Well, actually, there was another one too, but she got tired of that situation, and then 4 or 5 months ago, I saw a Craigslist ad, and I said, hey, there's a little rock cover band looking for a lead female singer, and she's now in that group. So,
where does she live?
In the Portland area.
Do they all live out there?
They do. Well, I have one, my youngest son and his wife and kids live in the Sacramento area, and I, my oldest son and daughter then also lived in the Portland area, and then we lost our middle son 2 years ago to cancer. And he was the one that was in the a cappella singing group, and this was something that in social media, this t-shirt I have on that says Contend is something that has become kind of one of his legacies, that people who had followed him, he had thousands of people following him on social media and things.
As he was dealing with what he was dealing with?
Right, and because he was in that popular group, he also was a worship leader in a 2,000-member church, and so he had a large community of people that he was connected with.
Do you still play worship music?
I do, yeah.
And through what venue? Through a church?
Through church, yeah. Right now I'm involved in about 3 or 4 different churches, so I kind of rotate through them.
Do you have to be the sound guy too? A lot of times band guys got to be the sound guys in those scenarios.
No, most of them are pretty sophisticated. You know, everybody's using no amps on stage, all in-ear monitors. And
wow.
So
makes you feel like a rock and roll star.
it has its trade-offs. But I personally have acquired recently some sound equipment because this one blues band did not have very much, and so I've gotten into that with a 20-channel main board and a 12-channel monitor mixer and big subs and everything. So if my hearing wasn't failing, I'd probably be a really good sound man.
Was that a return to something you had done or finally dipping into that side of the world of music?
Well, I've always been interested in that. Always have appreciated. There's a local band in the Portland area that have been around for 45 years called Johnny Limbo and the Lugnuts, and they're a covers 50s, 60s, well, 70s band, show band kind of thing. And every time I would go to hear them, the amazing sound guy would EQ that bass drum and that kick, the kick drum and the bass guitar so well, and I thought, that's the way music's supposed to sound, you know. So this past summer, I spent a few shows with him trying to pick his brain. The problem is I haven't made it into the digital world well enough, so I'm still old school analog, and there's so much that's done digitally that it's hard to...
Yeah, it's kind of hard to spin up in the world of analog today, and then there'll be a lot of learning.
Yeah.
A lot of learning.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do your third song.
All right. My third song was during the 70s, I would listen to a lot of James Taylor, Carole King, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. You know, I seemed to be drawn towards that, again, that close harmony ballad. I love Travis-style finger-picking songs, that style. And one of the particular songs that I was really drawn to, just aesthetically, just the sound of it, was Dan Fogelberg's Leader of the Band, just that opening, the guitar music on that. And I don't think it was the first time. I think it was the right time when I remember driving, probably coming home from work late at night. It was dusk. And both the theme of the song has struck chords in my own heart, because I never really had a dad. My real father was killed when I was 3 years old, and I had a succession of abusive alcoholic fathers in my life. He was a quiet gentleman, and he was the leader of the band. So all the musical themes and the father themes tugged both ways, both my absence of a father and having four children that I wanted to leave that kind of legacy with. So it, I think I wept that one on that drive home that night.
Hmm. Let's listen to it.
Right.
This is Leader of the Band by Dan Fogelberg from his 1981 album The Innocent Age. It's John McKenney's final song here on Three Song Stories.
Legacy to the leader of the band.
What's that make you feel listening to that with us?
Still tugs at my heart. Tugs at my heartstrings.
Hmm. When was the last time you listened to it?
I don't think it's been too long. I often will just hit random artists on my playlist on my iPhone and when I'm about doing different things, and that often pops up.
Do you play your acoustic guitar just by yourself and learn songs as just a person in a guitar and stuff like that? Do you ever play around like that?
I do. I have been playing there's a auxiliary ministry at our particular church I attend called Celebrate Recovery. It's for people with hurts, habits, and hang-ups, which includes most of us. And I claim dysfunction is my drug of choice, but the dysfunction of codependency probably is my biggest dysfunction. But anyway, from its outset for the last 17 years, I've led worship at that on Friday nights. As of late, for the last couple of years, I'm in charge of making sure they try to have music that night and try to do it once or twice a month. And in that process, I probably learned more about music because I had to start creating charts or finding charts and saying, okay, and I played acoustic guitar on that because it's easier to lead and sing doing that than it is from the bass, in spite of what Paul McCartney and Sting do. But
And you sing?
I can lead people into singing.
Okay, I was going to say, because you kind of danced around singing this whole time.
I love to sing, but I got about a three-note range, and it seems to be lessening as the voice ages. So,
Do you and your wife Donna's musical tastes align?
She actually played piano when she was a young girl, but she's not been very musical. She always jokes that she plays the spoons, but she enjoys music. Again, it's still continuing. She would say that people at church thought she was a widow or divorced because they never saw me sitting with her because I was always up and those kinds of things.
But what about the bands she listens to? Does she listen to anything that you are not super into or vice versa?
No, I think we're very aligned in our I should take that. I also like smooth jazz, you know, the Spira Gyra.
You did the air quotes.
Right, because that's such a, you know.
That phrase has a lot of baggage anymore.
Right. But Spira Gyra, those kinds of music I like. Anything that even smells like jazz, she dislikes. So.
Even smells like jazz. Yeah. I love that. Is there any like music that's modern that you guys listen to? Or you just listen to the music that you listen to?
I don't understand a lot of the music of today. I have seen some people rap that was powerful. But I wouldn't sit down and buy a rap album, you know, and that kind of things. A lot of the electronic music of today is fascinating and interesting, but it's so much of it is more electronic than it is actually musicianship, you know, but it creates an amazing, pleasant sound. So,
do you still have records or CDs, or are you fully streaming by now?
I have a pile of albums up in my closet that I don't have a vinyl. I don't have anything to play them on. Got rid of all the 8-tracks. No more cassettes left. I do have some CDs, but I mainly stream. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
8-tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready for a speed round?
Okay, we may have to push the pause button a number of times.
We'll throw this at you. Do you have a nickname that stuck over the course of your life that you'd be willing to share?
I don't. There were a few uncomfortable names my brothers used to call me, but and we were all Skinny McKinney's in our early age. But other than that, it's kind of Mac or something like that.
Karaoke? Do you do karaoke?
I have never done it. My daughter's really big into it because she's such a good singer. But
I assume you probably didn't since you said you have a three-note range.
Yeah,
and you.
I have never done karaoke.
If you were a championship wrestler, John McKinney, what music would you enter the arena to?
I heard you ask someone else that.
So you've had time to think
big,
about it.
Big Bad John, you know? I mean, what else?
wrestler name, Skinny McKinney.
Yeah, that would
Big
work.
Big Ben John.
He's not so skinny
come
anymore.
You're still pretty skinny. If you had to guess, what would you say is the song you've listened to the most times over the course of your life? If you had some magic ability to add it up.
I don't know. My wife and I's song, and we even had it, I even performed it with some friends on our 25th wedding renewal valve anniversary event that we had, was And I Love Her by the Beatles. And so we still, that's one that we often go to. But
And you said you've been married for 58 years?
Well, we've been together for 58 okay. years because we started going together when we were 14 at that mature age. And then we married when we were 18 at 68. So and this coming October will be 54 years of marriage.
Wow. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
What activities or pursuits make you lose track of time the most?
Probably song charting and preparation. When I am doing that, I can really get lost in that. Or getting on YouTube and starting listening, going down those rabbit holes of this music and then listening to that and this and that. And all before you realize it, the day's gone almost, you know.
Song you wish you could hear again for the very first time?
Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles off is that the Rubber Soul album, I think?
Got a nod from Jared on that one.
Okay.
Overplayed song. What's the most overplayed song of all time from your perspective?
Stairway to Heaven, maybe.
Pretty good answer. Pretty easy answer. If you could broadcast a song into the head of all humans in a collective moment, which song would you give them?
There are lots of them. I was thinking this morning as I was thinking in preparation of this, there was a song in the late 60s by Mac Davis called I Believe in Music. And I remember shortly after my conversion experience, I changed that into I Believe in Jesus. But even the song as it is, I think, so powerful because music, I believe, is a universal language that God... I made the reference earlier, atheists ain't got no songs or don't got no songs, Steve Martin wrote, because I think God created music. It's mathematical. It's something that we were wired to experience. And sometimes music communicates to us in a way that gets past all the things, all the barriers that we put up emotionally and spiritually and everything. So that I think that would be a good song for people to listen to.
As Stevie Wonder said, music is a language we can all understand. And the Beatles' Eleanor Rigby is from Yellow Submarine, the album.
Really?
So says Google.
Okay, well, I'm going to check my album.
We're so lucky that music...
Double A-side, okay. It says.
Okay. We're just glad that music does what it does because we wouldn't have the show if it didn't. You mentioned albums. When was the last time you listened to an album from track one to track 11 or whatever?
I recently saw in Portland an artist that I was aware of named Keb Moe.
I've heard of Keb Moe.
Yeah. And I liked him so much. I was aware of him, got to see him live, and so I bought his most current album called Back on the Streets or something like that. And that was probably 6 months ago, and I bet I've listened to that front to cover in drive time probably 15 times. So most recently, that would be the one.
When you're in the car, do you still sometimes listen to FM radio music?
If I do, it's usually...
Because I'm in a rental car.
Yeah, usually it's a Christian station. There's a syndicated... Well, there's a fellow from Fort Myers named Bob Obsberg who started at the station out there on McGregor. It was a church. Anyway, he started Way FM, and it's a syndicated and has four or five places all over the states. But the larger one is called K-Love, and that's the one I probably predominantly listen to, which keeps me abreast of the current popular Christian songs that are out.
Hmm. What would your 14-year-old self, who just met Donna, think of who you are today and the fact you're still with her?
Well, you know,
58 years.
Yeah. Those of us who came out of the 60s, we all said, don't trust anybody over 30, and we're not going to make it, you know. So I would think my 14-year-old self would say, man, I wish I could have enjoyed the ride between then and now. I think he'd be a bit surprised at the way things have turned out.
What's it like to drive around Fort Myers now, having known it back when it was so much smaller?
When I reminisce, I think in 1964 also, I had a Honda 150, and you were allowed to drive when you were 14 years old. It was a little bit too powerful. It was supposed to be a anyway, I remember driving down the trail from Sam Galloway Ford there at Winkler to the Villas, and there was nothing except for when the airplanes would fly over you when you're on a little motorcycle. So I try to – there's that, that addiction is always that looking for – to repeat that one-time euphoria. And when I drive around Fort Myers, it's almost disheartening because I can't identify things and places and stuff.
What about driving down McGregor? Does it still feel like driving down McGregor? It's widened a little bit.
Yeah, palm trees. One of my ex-stepfather's sister lived in that little house that said God is love there on McGregor. And so we often drive by to look for that one.
It's still there.
Still there.
Made it through Ian.
Yeah.
All right. It's time for you to recommend your three people.
All right. I've referenced him, I think all three of them, throughout our time together. But the first one would be my childhood friend, Jerry Toronto, who would be a wealth of information. Not only did Jerry play and he wrote a lot of the music for the bands, but he also had a recording studio, started off in his garage over off McGregor, but they built a studio in Cape Coral. So he was very knowledgeable about the music.
And he's still around here?
And he's still living.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Would love that.
In Fort Myers. Second one would be, and I referenced him, Dave Franya. He was in one of the rival bands. I think they were called the Castaways, of which Bob Augsburg, who was the lead guitar player for that band. Dave is a very talented multi-instrumentalist. He plays guitar, bass, keyboards, sings, little drums too, I think. So, and he's still, I'll go be seeing him tonight. And then the third fella, I think I only played with this guy once or twice. I was becoming a new member of the band. It was after I came back, I think, from New York City. His name is Billy Thomas. He was in a band called Osiris. He later moved to Nashville. He's a Nashville studio drummer and is also Vince Gill's drummer. And he would be an excellent guy to have. And he still has family here in Fort Myers and so travels here. So
awesome. Do put this in their ears and connect us with
them.
And we will do what we can. Do you have any final thoughts for us?
I believe in music, I believe in Jesus, and I think those two can carry you a long way.
Cheers to that. Thank you, John.
Okay.
We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, Florida. Richard Chinqui is co-creator and producer. Tara Callaghan is our online content producer and host. Our production assistant is Jared the Intern Gonzalez. Christophus is executive producer. And our theme song was made by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For this week's parting tune, we're going back a year to episode number 211, guest Amy Ginsberg. She's executive director of the Southwest Florida Symphony Orchestra that's based at the Barbara B. Mann Performing Arts Hall in Fort Myers. Amy's second song story took her back to a non-traditional mommy-daughter night with her teenage daughter Juliana. Amy said she truly loves live music and is into a band called Surfer Blood, and they just so happened to be playing a gig at Nice Guys Pizza in Cape Coral. Her daughter, who also digs the band, was working that night, so she couldn't go. But Amy went on alone, and she was waiting for the show to begin, and she noticed a woman who was about her age versus the much younger crowd, and that woman waved her over.
I was kind of confused about why this woman was here. She introduced herself, Jill Switzer, and this is my daughter, Lindsay. She's the bassist in Surfer Blood. And I'm like, what? So, yeah, I basically spent the evening with Jill. She's also a musician, a singer. She and her husband perform like jazz standards and big band stuff in Palm Beach. And Jill was talking about what it was like being on the road with a band. And I don't want to out secrets, but anyway, she shared stuff that I was honored she shared with me. And the reason I went was there, you know, the tune I know that popped out of my head was Swim. So they're getting ready to hit the stage. And I text Juliana and I'm like, as soon as you're done at work, you need to get over here because we got to have like a mommy daughter night. What? I said, no, you don't understand. I met the bass player from Surfer Blood and her mama's here. And so we can hang out with her and her mama. And so, again, bringing back memories of like, oh, we can have mommy-daughter tea party. Now it's mommy-daughter surfer punk.
Keep listening.
Next time on Three Song Stories.
And I went back to my hostessing job. And I remember Will and a bunch of people coming to the window on Sunday when I was getting ready to open the restaurant. And I'm like doing the books. And they're in the window laughing and pointing and just making faces at me. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing here? And they were like, what are you doing here? What's wrong with
you? You filled your last salt shaker, Karen Parsons.